Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. City planners increasingly consider climate change when crafting sustainable models of living. Joining me to explain the scope of those considerations is Julian Agyeman, Tufts University Professor of Urban and Environmental Policy and Planning. Julian, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you.
Your talk at the University of Pennsylvania tomorrow is entitled Beyond Green Environmentalism, Equality of Life, and Just Sustainabilities. For starters, why don't we get some definitions out of the way? What's green environmentalism?
Well, you know, it's interesting. If we went out into the streets of Philadelphia or any large city, and or in fact anywhere, and asked people what they thought of as sustainability or environmentalism, most people would say, well, it's about the environment. And of course it is, but it's about so much more. And sustainability, especially what I call a just sustainability, is about the need to include considerations of social justice and equity when we talk about sustainable cities. We cannot have a truly sustainable city with deep inequalities and deep injustices.
Is this a matter of having a broader base of those at the table involved in the planning process?
Yes. A broader base of people who define the sustainability agenda would clearly make an agenda different. I mean, if you think about some of the accusations 20 years ago from the environmental justice movement about who was running the big 10 environmental groups, those groups really didn't look like America. Those groups were all white, their boards were white, most of their staffers were white, and so the agenda that these organizations were putting forward was an agenda that really appealed to a white middle-class audience. And so the idea of broadening the base and including more people, I think, is a very positive way to develop an agenda of inclusion rather than exclusion. So one concept that I'll be talking about is what I call spatial justice. Now, we think of social justice as people having access to resources irrespective of their socioeconomic status, but what about spatial justice? That says, how do we distribute goods over space? So why are different communities differentially treated or differentially accessing resources? And so spatial justice is just a spatialization, in a sense, of resource distribution, and it helps us as urban planners think about who gets what and how they get it.
So I presume included in that category of spatial justice would be this growing popularity of urban agriculture. You recently wrote about caveats, though, to the concept that it's a win-win for all involved.
Let me start with just thinking of urban green spaces. There are studies showing that basically the poorer neighborhoods have less access to quality green spaces than wealthier neighborhoods. Wealthier neighborhoods have more trees. Wealthier neighborhoods are more walkable than poorer neighborhoods, which tend to be dominated by large roads, freeways, etc. And this is no accident, and we don't need to get into that, but believe me, this was not an accident. Urban agriculture has been shown to be a very useful way of providing employment, building social capital, providing nutritional and culturally appropriate foods in low-income neighborhoods. But what I worry about sometimes is that urban agriculture is seen as the panacea. There's a poor neighborhood, let's develop an urban farm. It is not a panacea, but it can help as part of a balanced community economic development strategy.
You briefly referred to the infrastructure needed to, in this case, distribute food and resources to all in the city. And yet we have this complete streets promise to make cities more walkable and livable, though you've written most recently a book entitled Incomplete Streets, Processes, Practices, and Possibilities. Explain.
We need a bigger conversation. So I'm not dismissing, as an urban planner, I'm not dismissing complete streets. But what I'm saying is when they are undertaken in the absence of a discussion with the community, the wider community, they can lead to displacement and gentrification, and then what I call incomplete streets. Because if we are pushing out the original inhabitants, then these streets are not complete. I'll give you one very concrete example. City of Los Angeles is getting into the idea of complete streets, but one of the most iconic street happenings is the food vendor, the Latino food vendor. That's a vibrant part of Latino community life, and yet they are illegal in Los Angeles. How could you have a complete streets policy when you are deeming illegal a very, very important part of the culture of a very, very important demographic in Los Angeles. It doesn't make sense. So we need to think beyond urban design, and we need to think towards social inclusion and wider systems of participation. As you said at the beginning of the interview, who's at the table when these complete streets ideas are being designed?
Coming to Philadelphia, what aspects of the evolving scene here are of interest to you?
What I am coming with is a great interest in two things. One is the Philly Land Bank, because if communities, as I talked about them, have any chance of intervening in increasingly expensive urban markets, the Land Bank and associated community land trusts have to work together. And we're trying to work out how Philly Land Bank and community land trusts are going to work together to dispose of land, not to the highest bidder, but to the best bidder in terms of community interest. That's one thing. Also, I'm interested in Philly bikes. None of these bike share schemes were designed with low-income and minority people in mind. They were designed for tourists and commuters. But what Philly Bikes is doing, and I've spoken to them about this, and it's great, is they're doing a lot of visioning and focus groups with low-income communities in the Philadelphia area to try and build in. It's this point you brought up, which is a great point, about who's at the table. Well, not even just who's at the table, but who's setting the table. So Philly Bikes is trying to work with local communities and find out what they could do to make a bike scheme more applicable to everybody.
Do you have cause, frankly, to be optimistic that these ideas can not just be discussed but put into practice?
Yeah, I really do. There are lots of examples where we're moving into what we're calling the sharing economy, or what I would prefer to call the sharing city, where we're moving beyond Airbnb and bike share and car share to think about cities as they originally were, sharing spaces. We share roads, we share the streets, we share parks and gardens, we share infrastructure. If we can get back to some notion of the true sharing city, and there are lots of examples from San Francisco to Seoul to Copenhagen to Amsterdam, where cities are starting to think, how do we as city leaders, as city governments, how do we enable a more progressive form of communal sharing in cities? This would help, especially those who have less resources, think about a different way forward. And I'm very optimistic in that sense, yeah.
Professor, thanks so much for piquing our curiosities and sensibilities on Newsworks tonight.
Great. Thank you very much.
Julian Adjeman is Tufts University Professor of Urban and Environmental Policy and Planning. He'll be speaking at the University of Pennsylvania tomorrow night, a talk entitled Beyond Green Environmentalism, Equality of Life, and Just Sustainabilities.